Please turn in the Word of God to Daniel chapter 3 on page 894. Commencing once again the reading of this portion of God's Word from the first verse. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. That's 90 feet in height and 9 feet in breadth. He set it up on the plain of Jura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up.' Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, 'Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve any gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now if you are ready when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?' Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fire, fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden idol, the golden image that you have set up.' Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their clothes, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated. The flame of the fire killed those who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men unbound, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. Their hair, the hair of their heads was not singed. Their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Amen, and may God bless to us the reading of this astonishing chapter of his word. Conviction, but not conversion. Confrontation over conformity. Complete submission, bringing life from Christ. Those are the three headings that I'm going to preach under this evening. Conviction, but not conversion. Last Lord's Day evening, we completed our studies in the second chapter of Daniel. That huge dream that Nebuchadnezzar had been dogged with for nights on end, that he could get no relief from, that none of his counselors, his wise men or Chaldeans could give him an answer to. That dream that God revealed to Daniel, that dream of the giant of the golden head, the silver chest, the bronze thighs, the iron legs and the feet of iron and clay, that statue that was smashed into pieces by the stone, little stone, to begin with, that was uncut by human hand. At the end of chapter 2, we see in verse 46 that Nebuchadnezzar falls at the face, his face, and pays homage to Daniel. And he speaks concerning the God who has revealed to Daniel both the dream and the interpretation of the dream. And these are Nebuchadnezzar's words in verse 47 of the second chapter. "Truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings, a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery." God of gods, Lord of kings. This man had been greatly troubled by these dreams. He received an answer. Daniel has spoken of the fact that that answer didn't come from him. It had been revealed to him by God. Nebuchadnezzar was convicted concerning his knowledge of this God. And you think that this would be a great turning point in his life. That here is a situation where he, as the leader and the king of the superpower of the world at the time, would be one who, seeing the hand of God in this way, personally in his own life, would then have turned his face to God and with diligent obedience sought Daniel out to find out all that he could about this God. This God whom he speaks of as God of gods and Lord of kings. Convicted as to the reality and the power of this God. But not converted. For in the opening verses of chapter 3, we read that Nebuchadnezzar establishes a new religion in Babylon. In an effort to draw together the various disparate groups under which he was now exercising rule, Nebuchadnezzar, after thought, decides that he is going to establish this new religious order. And we read that at the heart of this religious order will be a statue. A statue that is 90 feet high and 9 feet in breadth. A tall, slender statue. This image is made of gold. It is set up in a region called Jura, which is a plain in the province of Babylon. And to demonstrate Nebuchadnezzar's desire that this becomes the object of worship in Babylon, he sends out an order that all of the leading officials in the empire must gather together for the ceremony of dedication for this huge golden statue. Was it that Nebuchadnezzar took the image of the dream, the head of gold, and decided himself that he is going to build not just a statue that is a head of gold, but a statue that is all gold? And therefore this statue represents a new religion and a new world order which will last because it doesn't have the weaker metals and it certainly doesn't have the brittle feet of iron and clay. This is a world order, this is a religion that is going to draw all the people together. They are all going to be able to engage in the worship of this new statue and the religion that it associates and the religion that it will represent. And a great deal of effort is put into the compositions of the music and the songs and the ceremonies that are going to mark this new religious activity. Nebuchadnezzar is quite determined to unify his people. And so we read that this man gathers together, verse 2, the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that he has set up. He had been convicted
as to the reality of God. But he had not been converted to a living relationship with God. There is a difference. And it is a very, very significant and important difference. It is one thing to have a conviction that God exists. It's quite a different thing to be converted, to live in delightful communion with God. It's one thing to be impacted in your head by God. It's one thing to be shaken by God. It's one thing to be startled and for God to get your attention. It's an entirely different thing to come and live your life for God, 7 days a week, worshipping and delighting in Him. One commentator speaking of this uses the illustration of a violent storm. And a man walks into a place of shelter, and there he rests in that place of shelter from the storm that's raging outside. And he's very thankful for the comfort and the ease and the nourishment and the refreshment that he gets in that place of refuge. But the storm abates. The sun comes out. It shines into the building again. And the man is attracted to leave that place, to leave that dwelling, and to go back out into the world and the ways of the world. Yes, convicted as to the threat upon his life, convicted as to the need of somewhere to dwell and find refuge and security. He avails of that opportunity. But when everything gets back to normal, then the fear that drove him to seek that place of refuge, the concern that led him through the door of that building, that's gone. And so he returns back to the old ways, back out to the old haunts, until the next time. Next time a storm brews in his life, whatever number of years later. And suddenly he's awoken again. This is something he must do. Something he must take care of. He has been meaning to address this all his life. He has been meaning to come face to face with this change that he needs to make in his life. So he seeks the refuge again. But again, it's transitory. He's under conviction, but there's no real conversion. This is Nebuchadnezzar. And we must take care that when people speak of how God has done a great work in their life, yes, to encourage them, but also to point out to them, there's a huge difference between speaking of a great work of God in your life and demonstrating that through a life of willful obedience to God. It's one thing to get roused and excited about God as the Lord of God, kings and the King of kings and the God of gods, and to speak of how God has spoken to me and how God has acted in my life. It's another thing entirely to then live with conviction under the directing influence and control of God. And whilst we don't want to discourage anyone, it is important that as we encourage them, that we love them enough to actually call them to live and make choices that demonstrate that what they profess to believe is real. Conviction, but not conversion. Confrontation over non-conformity. Confrontation over non-conformity. This huge event takes place. The orchestra must have been phenomenal. All the instruments are listed, not once, not twice, but three times. I trust you're pleased to see that there are even bagpipes. Isn't that interesting? And you thought that you Scots were the ones who invented the bagpipes, when it was really we Irish who invented the bagpipes. And we took it from here. This great assembly of people, it's difficult for us to imagine something of the magnitude of this. Again, the individuals who were there, we have them listed not once, not twice, but three times. It was a great, great assembly of people. And there was a threat given by the king, although it was one of those threats he probably thought, this will never be have to be realized. In verse 6 we read that anyone who does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. The anticipation was that everyone would follow suit. But the consequence had to be given, and so it was. And so the great event took place, and we read in verse 7 that as the sound of all the horn and the pipe and the lyre and the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe and every kind of music that all took place, we read in verse 7 that all the peoples, nations and languages fell down. Can we picture this scene? Tens of thousands of people, dignitaries from all over the provinces of Babylon, music to delight the ear. People have been practicing for this event for months. The choreography of it had all been worked out. Everybody knew where they were to stand. Everybody knew where they were to be placed. All the dignitaries would have had their seats reserved. There would have been a pecking order right up to the front of the statue. And the leading men would have been at the front, as is always the wont in these type of ceremonies. Those who are the most significant, the greatest dignitaries, have their seats reserved at the front. And as you make your way down through the plain, you get to the ordinary people at the back. The orchestra is playing. They have been training. They have been playing. They have been practicing for months in preparation for this great event. Everybody, the sound of the music, bows down. Everybody has entered in to this new religious order. They've all accepted the reality of it. They've all accepted Nebuchadnezzar's leadership and his direction. All but three. Three men are identified as not participating. We read the Chaldeans come forward to Nebuchadnezzar, and having paid due deference to him, O king, for live forever, they remind him of the fact that he has decreed that every man should bend a knee when he hears the sound. And they remind him, verse 11 of chapter 3, that he had issued this decree that if an individual or individuals did not fall down and worship, that they be cast into the fiery furnace. Then they identify three Jews. Three Jews who Nebuchadnezzar had appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon. These were not three unknown men. These three men were known. These three men had been elevated in responsibility at the end of chapter 1. At the end of chapter 2, they had been elevated in further responsibility. And now these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these Chaldeans tell Nebuchadnezzar that these men have paid no attention to him. They do not serve his gods, nor do they worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. You'd wonder how they had saw these three men among the tens of thousands of people that were there. And yet, you see, there were people who were there who knew who Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they were watching them. They were watching them. Because they had known what these three men believed and the one in whom they believed. These three men were marked men. Arising out of chapter 2, these three men had been identified with Daniel as those who had given to Nebuchadnezzar an answer to the dream that he could not get answered by anyone else. They were understood and they were known and they were marked for who they were. And there was no way that what they were going to do on that day, although they didn't set out to create an Easter, we don't read that Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego made their way up to the front of the statue and deliberately stood up while everybody was bowing down. It wasn't that they made a huge demonstration of the fact that they were not going to obey the order of Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't do it loudly and gregariously. Quietly, they did not participate. And yet their quiet non-participation is marked. And we read that maliciously, these men come forward and accuse Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And this turns Nebuchadnezzar into a furious rage. It is palatable, the rage that he has deemed. It would have been, if there had been a nation or a people who had asserted their authority against Nebuchadnezzar, but three individuals, three men set out to defy him. Three men say no to him. When all the leading officials of Babylon are there bending down, and all the choreographed music, and all the dancers, and all that was assembled in front of this huge statue, these three men said no. We are not going to conform. Staggering. What hope had they? Would anybody have seen them if they had have bent over? Three men. Who would have taken any note of them? They could have been down and up again before you'd have said, "How are you?" And yet they refuse. And Nebuchadnezzar is good to his word. He offers them an opportunity. Probably given the fact that they were leaders in the provinces, he speaks to them and he brings them in. And he asks them the question if it is true that they have not bent down. And then he offers them the deal that if they are ready to bend down, well and good, that will be the end of the matter. But if they don't, then immediately they'll be cast into the burning fiery furnace. Now at this moment, this confrontation over non-conformity moves into the realm of complete submission. Complete submission. These men are confronted with a choice at this moment. Either they bend down and acknowledge this new religious order, or they don't. And they know what's at stake. They know what awaits them. It's not as if they are in the dark as to what the consequence will be. They know clearly that what will happen is that they'll be taken from that place at that moment. They'll be taken to this fiery furnace, which they're well aware of, and there they'll be put to death. When I use the word confrontation over non-conformity, in a sense, it's not a confrontation. Because these three men do not respond to the challenge that Nebuchadnezzar has given to them. They say in verse 16, "We have no need to answer you in this matter." There's not an arrogance here. It's not as if they're being arrogant. They are simply stating that in matters pertaining to the affairs of our lives, we are subject only to one, and that is God. Faced with the choice of serving the living true God or facing death, these men say, "We are going to commit ourselves into the hands of God." Now, here is the most important thing that you're going to hear tonight. These men are not afraid of what will happen. Their concern is to do what is right. They are not concerned about the consequences of their decision. They are concerned with getting it right. They say, if this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us. What faith! And he will deliver us out of your hand. Now they have just heard Nebuchadnezzar say, who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? I have you in the heart of my hands. You have no hope. There is no escape for you. I have the power of life and death over you. I can tell whether you're going to live or whether you're going to die. And they immediately say to Nebuchadnezzar, no, you don't have that power. It is God who has that power. And God, if he chooses to save us, will save us. And if God chooses not to save us, he chooses not to save us. But the one thing that we can tell you for sure is that we are not going to serve your gods or worship your golden image. They are not concerned about what will happen. They are concerned with doing what is right. And that is the number one problem in your life and in mine. Your problem tonight is that too often in your life, you consider the consequences rather than choosing to do what's right. You look at a situation and you assess it on the basis of what will the outcome be in terms of my relationships. You do that, and I do that. I have done that with some of you. There are occasions in my life when I have not done you right because I have been afraid of what that will mean for my relationship with you. And that has hurt me that I have failed you in that regard. Times in my life when I have been mentally weak through overwork, I have found myself buying the option of not saying, of not dealing with the issue because of fear of what that might mean for what you might think of me. And the problem with that is that I let you down. My fear of what the consequences were meant that I didn't go to you and say to you, this is the reality of the situation in which you find yourselves as God's word speaks of it to you. It's our fear of the consequences that bind us from willingly submitting to God and doing what is right. And because these men faced the consequences down, God might save us, God might not save us, but it doesn't matter whether he saves us or whether he doesn't save us. The bottom line is, we are going to do what is right. And that, my friends, is the basis on which the history of this church is established. For I could take you upstairs to a library up there and bring you books down and show you page after page after page after page of young and old alike who said, no, I am going to honor the name of Christ rather than give up. Rather than give up my love for him. It doesn't matter if you take me out and tie me at stake in the Solway Firth. It doesn't matter. And that wasn't said by a young woman who longed to die. These young men and women and young old men, the older men and women who laid down their lives for Christ didn't do so because they longed to be known as martyrs 300 years later. They made a decision, a deliberate, willful, intentional decision. I will do what is right, come what may. These men ended up in the furnace, and the men who took them down were incinerated in an instant. And they fell in. They fell in with all their clothes on and their hats on and every garment that they had and bound. And there they are. They fall in. There's no escape. There's immediate death. They're to be incinerated instantly. And then we see that Nebuchadnezzar gets to his feet and is astonished. How many men did we throw in? Three. I see four. They're unbound and they're walking about, and one of them is like a son of God, the sons of gods. There is Christ in with those men. This happened. This is not a story. This happened. These men actually fell into a furnace that incinerated the men who put them into it. They were released. And because of their complete submission, they met Christ. Come out, says Nebuchadnezzar. Come out. Not a hair was singed. Not an item of clothing was burned. And there wasn't even the smell of fire upon them. Such was the protecting hand of Christ. When God said in Isaiah 43, I will be with you through the fire, he meant that. Do you see what God does when we trust him? Do you see how he protects us? Do you see that his protection is not just a partial protection? It's not just a protection from the danger itself. It's a protection from all aspects of the danger. That every aspect of the danger cannot touch us in any way at all. And oh, that we would see the power of Christ in our lives. Oh, that we would taste of the power of Christ in our lives. Oh, that we would trust Christ in our lives. Those of you tonight who have been convicted but have not been converted, will you not trust him? Will you not stop running into the shelter when it suits you, when the storm's coming, and then come back out again and say everything is well, so I'll just... Do you not believe that Jesus Christ can take whatever situation you're in, and he can. He can protect you, he can shield you, he can hold you, he can keep you from being singed, burned, or even having a smell of fire upon you. Why will you not turn to Christ tonight? Why will you not bend the knee? Why will you not trust him? Why will you not lay down your life and say, Jesus Christ, I will believe in you. I will repent of my sin. I will turn from my sin. And I will believe in you. I will take you at your word. I will walk with you. I will talk with you. I will obey your word. Believer in Jesus Christ, why do we not trust him? Why will we not walk with him? Why is there not the conviction in our lives that we have here with these young men? And maybe I'm over harsh. Because maybe you are trusting him. Maybe you can say tonight, well, I know what it's like, Andrew, to trust him. I've done it. Will you keep on doing it? Will you keep on doing it? Will you keep on submitting your will to him? That he will protect you and he will guard you. That he will be with you. Do you believe it? Do you believe it as you get into your work this week? You get into school this week. Do you believe it? Do you believe it in the relationships you'll have this week? Well, you have to make the choice between right and fear of the consequences. Will you choose what's right? Or will you keep on being confronted by the consequences? Will you keep on avoiding him? Will you keep on running from him? Will you keep on living a life that is not guarded and protected and guided by him? Why? 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 Why?
He is faithful to His promises. His word is truth. It is light. It is life. Will you trust Him? Will you say to Him, whatever the consequences, I will do by His grace what is right. And I will know that I will walk with God. I will be with God no matter what. I will walk with Him. There was conviction here, but there wasn't conversion. There's a confrontation over nonconformity. But in the end, there was compliant submission, complete to God. And at the end of the chapter, we read that these three men got another promotion. Another promotion. Every time they committed to God, He raised them up.